The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, an original in-depth investigation into the question of whether or not Dr. Andrew Wakefield and his colleagues were dealt with in a proper, ethical, legal manner by the British medical community, by the British media, such as the Times of London, by Mr. Deere, who had done independent reporting for the Times, and by the American media. We have three individuals to share their points of view. I will also be asking my guest what they feel the connection is between the various vaccines and the adverse side effects they have seen, everything from gastrointestinal problems to autism. The mainstream medical community in the United States and in England have stood side by side to say that there is nothing wrong with vaccines, that anyone suggesting otherwise is irresponsible and could be leading to people becoming sickened or dying from not being vaccinated. We have been told by every major scientific organization, from the CDC and the FDA, from the Institute of Medicine and the American Academy of Sciences, from the Journal of the American Medical Association and the New England Journal of Medicine and the British Medical Journal and the Lancet, and virtually all the pediatric societies, that vaccines are absolutely proven safe and effective for any given child for virtually every condition that a vaccine exists. The American media has stood by that, has not challenged it, has done no original independent investigation. We have. The results of this will be shared by my guest. We're going to England now, to Kent, England, where my first guest, Clifford Miller, is standing by. Clifford Miller is in England, what is known as a barrister or a solicitor. He is a lawyer. And he is a solicitor for the Supreme Court of England in civil proceedings. He has a specialization in intellectual property, antitrust, and legal issues in electronics and communications fields. He also is a graduate in physics and a former university lecturer in law. And over the years, he's been active in the investigation and advocacy to determine the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Yeah. Joining him in about a half hour will be Isabella Thomas. She will be speaking on behalf of a group of parents, 12 original patients in the Royal Free study, the results of which were published in the Lancet by Dr. Wakefield, Walker Smith, Murch, and colleagues, where at no time in their paper, nor independent of that, did they ever claim or intimate that they were anti-vaccine. To the contrary, they have all been pro-vaccine. They never stated directly or indirectly or intimated that there was an association between the gastrointestinal disturbances that the children had experienced and autism. Now we're led to believe, with no backing and no support, that they claimed that there was an association between vaccines with the MMR and autism. And yet we've read the article, we've read the statements, so this is an argument being leveled against them that has no basis in truth, fact, or science. However, the parents have made associations but none of the parents were invited, not one, to speak before the official medical tribunal in the United Kingdom that found Dr. Wakefield and colleagues had, in effect, practiced bad medicine and now are claimed to have engaged in fraudulent activities. The entire American media has descended upon them, and led by Anderson Cooper on CNN. We are here to present a more balanced and objective presentation of the data and offer these parents an opportunity to share their stories. Then we will be joined by Jackie Fletcher. Jackie Fletcher is the founder of England's leading parent group for vaccine-related injuries about the MMR vaccine. In all this discussion, we've been led to believe that the MMR vaccine is not in question, that it is safe and effective. It is not. It is neither. And we will provide the information on that. Now to my guest, and we will spend the rest of this half hour with Clifford Miller. Mr. Miller, I would like for you, if you would please, to discuss something that no one in the American media has even contemplated. What if, and I raise this as a hypothesis, and I would like for you, based upon your direct experience, to tell us whether it can be confirmed or denied, that the British medical establishment at the highest levels has engaged in systematic faking, fixing of material on adverse vaccine events, therefore downplaying any fears that people may have, legitimate fears based upon real damage that has been done, so that the people continue getting the vaccines without any thought that there may be a downside, and hence, by extension, protecting the interests of the vaccine industry. Would you address my challenge, please?
Sure, Gary, I can do that. But there's one thing I'd like to address first, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
And that is the issue of, do vaccines cause autistic conditions? Now, people have got short memories, and the US government has itself confirmed that vaccines cause autistic conditions. And this happened first when New York journalist and author David Kirby broke the Hannah Poehling story in February 2008. And that set in a chain of interviews on U.S. national broadcast TV. And the next chink in the armor came when Cheryl Atkinson on CBS broadcast details of her exchanges with the Health Resources Services Administration in the U.S., where they had confirmed, and this is a quote, I have a copy of the email exchanges between Cheryl Atkinson and the HRSA, and this is a quote from it. We have compensated cases in which children exhibited an encephalopathy or general brain disease. Encephalopathy may be accompanied, now this is the bit, if you can't handle the big words, and I'm having trouble pronouncing them anyway, this is the bit. May be accompanied by a medical progression of an array of symptoms, including autistic behavior, autism, or seizures. Okay? So first we have the U.S. government settling the Hannah Poehling case secretly out of court, where they acknowledged that autistic condition was caused by 9 vaccines in one day. We then have the HRSA confirming to Cheryl Atkinson, it was broadcast on CBS News, that children can develop an autistic condition as a result of a vaccination. That was then followed, and this is a pretty big one as well. Sanjay Gupta interviewed CDC Director Julie Gerberding on CNN, and Gerberding confirmed that vaccinations could cause autistic conditions. Now, this is all created as a result of the breaking of the Hannah Poehling story. And this is exactly what she said. And you know, folks can go and look it up on the internet. They can look it on CNN's site and see the transcript. And she said this. Now, we all know that vaccines can occasionally cause fever in kids. So if a child was immunized, got a fever, had other complications from the vaccines, and if you're predisposed with a mitochondrial disorder, it can certainly set off some damage. Some of the symptoms can be symptoms that have characteristics of autism. Okay? Now, Following that, I'm going to deal with a few more things. I'm going to deal with Bernardine Healy and the current head of the NIH, National Institute of Health of the U.S. But I want to come to, I want to scroll forward to December 2010, so just over a month ago. A paper was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association confirming that these mitochondrial dysfunctions are common in autistic children. And in fact, one of the reasons why the U.S. government settled the Hanna-Poehling case was because in fall 2007, a paper was published showing that in Portuguese autistic children, 7% had a mitochondrial dysfunction. And there is other research that indicates about 1 in 200 in the population may have a genetic predisposition to having a mitochondrial dysfunction. So if they get a vaccine, develop mitochondrial dysfunction when they're kids, they could develop an autistic condition. And that's a pretty big number. Now let me go back to the next step of what happened as a result of the Hanna-Poehling story. Bernardine Healy, she was interviewed on CBS by Cheryl Atkinson. Now, Bernardine Healy is a former director of the U.S. National Institutes of Health. Okay, that's a U.S. body that's responsible for a $30.5 billion annual budget expenditure on health research. And she confirmed to Cheryl Atkinson that it was premature to dismiss the link between vaccinations and autistic conditions. She said, "I think that the public health officials have been too quick to dismiss the hypothesis as irrational." And then Atkinson said to her, "But public health officials have been saying they know. They've been implying to the public there's enough evidence and they know it's not causal." And Healy replied, "I think you can't say that. You can't say that." Now, these things can be looked up. You know, you can see them on the internet. You can see them on these U.S. news websites. And you can see it and you can read it for yourself. And Healy, Dr. Healy, is a Harvard and Johns Hopkins educated physician. She's a cardiologist and she's a former head of the National Institutes of Health herself. She's been a professor at Johns Hopkins. She's been professor and dean at the College of Medicine and Public Health at Ohio State University. And she served as president of the American Red Cross. Okay? Now, we were all told, you know, we're all being told repeatedly that it's all genetic, that these kids are developing these conditions because it's in their genes. Well, let's step back as well and have a look at that. We now have in the UK, if you take into account those kids who are yet to be diagnosed, we have Cambridge University research that says we have 1 in 64 kids with an autistic condition. In the US, the figure is 1 in 100. Okay, 1 in 64 kids means 1 in 40 boys. Now, you can't have that. It's impossible, genetically impossible, to have a rate of increase of a condition in 20 to 30 years from 2 to 4 in 10,000 to 1 in 64, because that's what it was before the vaccine era, in the 80s, in the early 80s, before the huge increases in the vaccine schedules. But let me put the icing on the cake, because I'm going to quote Dr. Francis Collins, who is the current 16th director of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, and he's a leading doctor and a geneticist, and he led the Human Genome Project. And when he was director of the U.S. National Human Genome Project Research Institute, he gave evidence in public to the U.S. House of Representatives, and this was in May 2006. And he confirmed that recent increases in chronic diseases like diabetes, childhood asthma, obesity, and autism must have an environmental cause and cannot be purely genetically caused conditions. This is what he said. Recent increases in chronic diseases like diabetes, childhood asthma, obesity, or autism cannot be due to major shifts in the human gene pool, as those changes take much more time to occur. They must be due to changes in the environment, including diet and physical activity, which may produce disease in genetically predisposed persons. And that was May 2006, evidence to the House of Representatives Committee. And that also can be seen on the web for anyone who wants to search for it. These are all powerful statements, and they can't be unsaid. And They can't unpublish what is now published. These are admissions by leading health officials and leading agencies in the USA. So the major death blow to these things has been a series of medical papers that have been published over the years. And I mentioned the Journal of Medical Association paper published on the 1st of December, which confirms that mitochondrial dysfunction is not rare. And then we had, interestingly, a paper published in Pediatrics, the Journal of the American Association of Pediatricians. And this was a consensus statement. It was published in January 2010. And it confirmed that autistic children have bowel conditions. And that was a key finding of the 1998 Lancet paper published by 13 specialist medical professionals at the Royal Free Hospital in London. And that was the team that Andrew Wakefield was on. He was one of those. He didn't come up with those results. The 12 other members of the team came up with those results, and he just wrote them up. And he's getting all the flack now. They were concerned. It wasn't just Andrew Wakefield that was concerned about this. They were concerned about what they'd seen and the parental reports. So to suggest that the medical professions are standing shoulder to shoulder when the US government is confirming to us that vaccines can cause autistic conditions. People's memories are too short. You've got to go back and you've got to go and look and see what's been published and said by the US government officials and the US government agencies themselves. So let me pass from that and let's get back to what you asked me at the beginning, which I think we can sum up in saying, are adverse reactions to vaccines underreported? I think that's the question you're asking me, Gary, yeah?
Yes.
And let's put that in simpler language. If somebody has a vaccination, or in fact it's any drug, if they have any pharmaceutical and something happens following the administration of that pharmaceutical, that drug, that vaccine, that's called an adverse event. It may or may not be caused by what they've been given. And our ability to know how often people suffer reactions to drugs is dependent upon it being reported. So we have to know how many reactions are actually being reported and how many are not. And there is very substantial underreporting of serious adverse reactions. There is existing formally published papers showing that the underreporting rate for all drugs, not just talking about vaccines, is at least 90 out of every 100 reactions. But it's worse than that, because there is also published data indicating that the underreporting of serious reactions can be as much as 98 to 99 in every 100. Okay, so that's massive underreporting. Now, when it comes to vaccines, you're giving medication to healthy individuals. You're giving it to people who, on the whole, the majority will never suffer a problem from the disease that the vaccine is designed or intended to counter. So you have to be really, really sure that those vaccines are safe. But the problem is, with this kind of level of underreporting of adverse reactions, we're not even getting onto any issue of whether or not they're properly investigated. When you've got that level of underreporting, you cannot know how safe or unsafe the drug or the vaccine is because you don't have the data. And I happen to have on my desk, which has come across my desk this week, documentation which is not publicly available, And I'm hoping that we can find some honorable and honest researchers who may write the information up, and honest and honorable editors of medical journals who may indeed publish it, from which you can, for the first time, provide reasonably accurate estimates of the levels of underreporting. Mm-hmm. And this information is in official government documents which have been made available under Freedom of Information in the United Kingdom. And it contains detailed data, and it's differential data. So it shows the rates of underreporting for different kinds of surveillance. And when I say surveillance, we're talking about where doctors spontaneously see a reaction in a patient and they report it. They'd be reporting it to your FDA over there, or they'd be reporting it to our Medicines Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency here. Now, that's a pretty low level. We have what's called a yellow card system. For vaccines, you've got the Vaccines Adverse Event Reporting System. And you no doubt have something corresponding to our yellow card reporting system. These spontaneous reporting systems are abysmally poor at recording adverse reactions to anything. And lots of things are missed. There's a drug called thioridazine, which was used in the UK for 40 years, and it's also has been used in the USA. And it wasn't until somebody published a paper in a journal in 2000, which showed that thioridazine, which is also called Melaril, causes heart problems. In other words, it causes death. I'll use heart failure as a term, but it's not the correct term. There are various ways in which the heart can stop. And it causes heart failure. Now, that drug was being prescribed and used for 40 years. It was substantially used in the UK for elderly patients for the well-known disease of restlessness and agitation. But it wasn't until somebody bothered to investigate in 2000 and publish a paper that was removed from first-line use in psychiatric care. And that was when we had the yellow card system. That drug sat side by side with our yellow card system for 40 years, almost to the year, almost to the day, and it was never spotted for 40 years. That's how good the yellow card system is. That's how good these spontaneous reporting systems are. Then we come on to the problems that we can see very clearly in, again, Freedom of Information documentation, which is becoming available. We can see how government health officials and medical professionals who are seconded onto committees to advise our government quite intentionally do not make the risks known to the public. And all of the problems that we see today that Andrew Wakefield is facing arise from a vaccine called Pluzarix, which was introduced into the United Kingdom in October 1988. And it was a dangerous vaccine, and it had to be withdrawn in 1992. And when that vaccine was withdrawn in 1992, after causing very high levels of adverse reactions, and probably quite a lot of these autism cases that we're seeing today, the documents now available show that our health officials got round together in a huddle in various committees, and they decided that they were not even going to pull the license for Pluzarix MMR. And what has been happening since that time, because they didn't pull the license, they didn't take regulatory action to cancel the license to allow that vaccine to continue to be marketed. Organizations like UNICEF have been buying that type of vaccine. What was one of the key things wrong with it was the mumps strain, which was called Urabi. And UNICEF has been buying year on year up to the present day Urabi strain containing MMR vaccine and supplying it to the third world. And that Urabi mumps strain containing MMR vaccine is the same vaccine, the same mumps strain vaccine that the Japanese withdrew all those years ago. And the killer to this all is that Pluserix MMR vaccine that was introduced in October 1988 to the UK is the identical vaccine that was withdrawn in Canada in 1987. And so this is a SmithKline vaccine, and that was being manufactured for Canada under the name Trivirix, but it is the identical vaccine. It has the identical component parts, and it was manufactured in the same SmithKline factory in Belgium and supplied to Canada and had to be pulled from Canada because it was causing lots of adverse reactions. And then our British government introduced it into the UK, and it did exactly the same. And so we see UNICEF supplying it around the world since 1992 when it was pulled in the UK, and supplying it to the third world kids. And it was also supplied in Brazil. In 87, it's reported in the medical journals. In Brazil, they had the same problems.
This is called dumping toxic vaccines on third world countries. This is a form of institutional racism, in my opinion.
Well, what's worse than all of this is that the vaccine was pulled on the basis, it was withdrawn from the market on the basis that it caused viral meningitis. But the documentation I have shows that that vaccine was causing a whole host of adverse reactions. It wasn't just viral meningitis. I've got examples of 96 adverse reaction reports, which include 16 deaths.
Any of them neurological that could be associated with mitochondrial deficiencies in the brain?
Well, data from all that time ago, I mean, I can't speak to the medical details of, you know, what mitochondrial disorder
has
caused, and I can't go into those details. You'd need a medical professional to address those.
You've made your point well on that. It tells us that a very, very lethal adverse vaccine that had been pulled in Japan and Canada and Great Britain is still being used as we speak today by UNICEF. This is not uncommon, regrettably, but no one's looking. You've also let us know that there are multiple instances of people high up within our own medical industrial complex stating that there are associations between different vaccines and neurological disturbances, including autism. And yet all this has been denied by the mainstream media. I'd like to go to two specific issues, if you would, please. And that is the government cover-up of knowing full well that thimerosal, the mercury, in vaccines is responsible for the rapid rise in epidemic proportions of life-threatening allergies, particularly food allergies, and yet the government continues to state that thimerosal is not a problem. Because if it said it was a problem, then how would it justify it being in the H1N1 and the flu vaccines and some other vaccines? Your thoughts?
Well, thimerosal, or thimerosal, depending upon which, whether you're in the UK or the USA, it's also called merthiolate. The European Medicines Agency have a number of documents which confirms that thimerosal causes people to become allergic. Now, I'm distinguishing, you've got to distinguish here the situation where you react to an allergen, something causes an allergic reaction, from the situation where you didn't have an allergy in the first place, and you suddenly get one. Now, thimerosal, which is toxic in parts per billion, okay, causes allergy. And the European Medicines Agency have a document which you can download from the internet which deals with sensitization. Sensitization is the term used for turning someone who doesn't have an allergy into someone who does. They become sensitized. And thimerosal causes sensitization. There is also another European Medicines Agency report which specifically states that thiamersal causes allergy, and the report was specifically dealing with that issue. Now, back in 1999, when the European Medicines Agency published their warning on sensitization by thiamersal, they were talking about taking it out of contact lens solution and cosmetics like lipstick, and they were still sticking it in vaccines. That's not all. So here we have a compound which is toxic in parts per billion. So let me put that in simple terms. If you have 1 gram of thiamersal, your baby would have to weigh 10,000 metric tons for you to be within the EPA guidelines of 0.1 micrograms per kilogram body weight. I think my math is fairly correct on that, but it's a big number. And I have never seen a baby weighing 10,000 metric tons. Have you? Anyway, that's the level of toxicity. But what we can also do is, uniquely in the United Kingdom, because we have socialized medicine, every prescription that is ever written is tracked. When the family doctor writes a prescription and you take it to the pharmacist, if that pharmacist wants to be paid, he has to produce every single piece of paper and then get paid against it when he issues the prescription drug to the patient. Every single one of those pieces of paper are tracked and listed on a computer system against every single type of drug and brand name of drug that is issued. That data is compiled and published annually in the prescription cost analysis. What relevance has this got? It means you can track the increase in numbers of prescriptions given to people with life-threatening allergies, because they are given in case they have what's called an anaphylactic shock. So if they come in contact with a food they're allergic to, their body can react violently, they can go into anaphylactic shock, and they can die. So what has happened is that you have an emergency injector which contains, some people call it adrenaline or epinephrine, and you'll have 2 of these issued, and a lot of people have these for their children, and if the child suffers a risk of an anaphylactic shock, if they show the symptoms of that, then you have got the emergency injector to inject to try and counter that. So we can count every single one of these injectors that is issued every year. And those data have been compiled, and you can go back from the current year all the way back to around the tail end of 1991. And when the massive increase, it's a huge increase, from the tail end of 1991 to the present day, there's been a huge increase in allergies, food, life-threatening allergies. And you can track the numbers from the injectors issued. So how did this come about? Well, we know that thiamersal causes allergy. And what we did in the UK was we accelerated one part of the vaccine schedule, and that was for the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis triple shot, which kids here get 3 of, and they used to get them at the ages of 3, 5, and 9 to 12 months. But in 1990, that was accelerated, and in 1990, the DTP shot had, like your kids have in the US, the same amount of thiamersal that was in the vaccines at that time, which was 50 micrograms of thiamersal, which is equivalent to 25 micrograms of mercury. I'm using loose terminology in terms of mercury, but that's just for present purposes to make it easy for people to follow. So our kids were getting injected at 2, 3, and 4 months. You know, we're talking about children at the most rapid development. And they're getting injected with a compound which we know causes allergy. So you then start to see from the tail end of 91, this was started in May 1990 in the UK, and so we see from the tail end of 1991 these massive increases starting in the numbers of emergency adrenaline injectors being issued to children. What is more interesting is that there are different types of injectors. There's a pediatric injector and there's an adult one. So you can even distinguish between how many children are getting these allergies and how many adults are getting these allergies and having injectors. And it's massively children. Now, we are not talking about eating ice cream and getting sunburn. Does eating ice cream cause sunburn? We're talking about sound, scientific, biological plausibility, and also, is there any other explanation? There is no other explanation. And I can come on to adverse reaction reporting and how you assess adverse reactions, because I don't know whether we've got time to get on to about the issue of the U.S. federal court and the inappropriate way they operate.
Clifford Brewer, what I want to do is this. We have two other panelists standing by. I'd like you to stay on hold, please. I still have two questions for you that are germane to our discussion today about the British Medical Journal, and it's not vetting Deere's article or his background. And what that represents is an attack against Wakefield and just simply objective medical reporting and the politics of that. But let us now bring in our, and by the way, for those of you who've just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a real quick break for station identification. Clifford Miller, he is a lawyer and a solicitor of the Supreme Court in England in civil proceedings, and he is here to talk about his great deal of research investigating the advocacy of safety and efficacy of vaccines. Joining us in a moment would be Isabella Thomas. More on the Wakefield issues and the inflammatory digestive bowel conditions in children with vaccine-related autism. And also Jackie Fletcher. She is the founder of England's leading parent group for vaccine-related injuries about the MMR vaccine. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Welcome all of you to a special in-depth investigation into the charges that Dr. Andrew Wakefield and a group of extraordinarily qualified physicians and scientists did some work in which at the Royal Free Hospital on a group of 12 patients who had gastrointestinal disturbances. They published their results in The Lancet, but then The Lancet withdrew the article after one individual complained, Brian Deere. We have already dealt with Brian Deere and his background, and where we feel that there's a great deal of discrepancy between what he has claimed and the evidence. Two people to share more on this, Isabella Thomas. Isabella Thomas has two autistic children who were part of the original 12 patients in the Royal Free study and reported on by Wakefield and Walker and Smith and Murch and other colleagues. It is this 1998 study by Wakefield, subsequently retracted by the publication, that has caused such a fury over the MMR vaccine, and which is now the basis for the witch hunt against Dr. Wakefield in the UK. Isabella has four sons. Two who received the MMR vaccine are now having autism and serious bowel problems, and two sons who did not received the vaccine for MMR and are just fine. And Isabella is also the main parent Brian Deere has been most focused on and attacking her. Nice to have you with us today, Isabella Thomas.
Thank you for inviting me on again. It's lovely to be with you.
I'm going to allow you an opportunity to tell your story. That what would you have said had the British Medical Society invited you to give evidence on your experience, the parents' other and children's experience with Dr. Wakefield at the Royal Free Hospital, since none of you were allowed to give your evidence, which to me is just remarkable in that it represents the worst form of exclusion by excluding the most important people in this whole controversy, the parents and their children. How in the world could they have possibly come to any objective outcome? The form is yours. Take us through your story.
Okay. Well, actually, I have emailed the BMJ today, and I have said to them that I feel they may be in contempt of court for actually publishing what Brian Deer is saying now, because Professor John Walker Smith is, in the springtime, he's actually appealing. So I'm told by a journalist that the newspapers, etc., that there should be a media blackout in the UK because they could be in contempt of court. So I did email them. I did say that to them. I did say that they haven't asked anything from about all the stuff they've got on their publishing to do with my children. What I would say to them is, first of all, I have all the boys' medical documents. They don't. They only have whatever Brian Deer has got. I would go through with them exactly where they and I would like to see exactly what they've got, which I've got. Nobody has actually been looking at the children, the Lancet children, and nobody has asked their opinion, because certainly Michael can talk. Have neurological problems, and some days he's very, very bad. Other days he's fairly lucid. And on one of these days, I asked his opinion. I asked him to write down, because he finds it it's easier for him to write down exactly how he's feeling.
We have a bad phone connection. I'm going to we can barely hear you, Isabella. I'm going to ask our engineer. I'm going to ask our engineer to call you right back. All right. We're going to take a brief break and come right back with a better, hopefully, phone connection with Isabella Thomas. Please stay with us.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend?
Okay, we're going to go to Jackie Fletcher. Evidently, she's trying to call us, so we're not able to get through to her. Jackie Fletcher, you're the founder of JABS, Justice Awareness and Basic Support Organization, which is perhaps the UK's largest, most active support group for parents of vaccine-damaged children. And Jackie has three sons and became active in vaccine issues when her youngest, Robert, received the MMR and Hib meningitis vaccine when he was 13 months old. In 1992, 10 days later, he suffered prolonged seizures. Now at 19 years of age, he is confined to a wheelchair and suffers from uncontrolled epilepsy, ulcerative esophagus, and has severe learning disabilities. It took 18 years before Fletchers were rewarded vaccine damage payments from the British government's vaccine damage tribunal for Robert's injuries. Nice to have you with us today, Jackie. Jackie, are you there?
I am, yes.
Yes. Tell
can
us,
you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you for inviting me.
Good. I would like for you to do this, Jackie. Tell us what you find are the problems with the Sunday Times and the British health authorities when it comes to the MMR vaccine, which most people and certainly everyone in the American media starts off with the assumption that they're safe and effective. So that's not even an issue. It's all about whether they reported correctly on what they found in these children. And I'm saying, hold on a second. Don't jump over this. The MMR vaccine is safe and effective, because you and a lot of other parents would have a lot to challenge them on that. Tell us your concerns, your research, and those of all the other parents that you have been in contact with concerning the MMR vaccine and the British authorities' willingness to be open and honest and about the dangers and the adverse effects.
All right. Well, it starts really with the misfocus of when the problems with MMR began. Brian Deer, writing his article for the Sunday Times, centered it on Dr. Wakefield's report in 1998 and tended to hold Dr. Wakefield up as the starter of what he purports is a scare. He's actually 10 years out, and he knows this because I told him this during an interview. The problems with MMR were known about by the people introducing it, the vaccine policymakers, before it was even introduced in October 1988. There are minutes that are available from our website which show the JCVI, which is the Joint Committee for Vaccination and Immunisation, discussing the introduction of the forthcoming MMR. And the three brands that they discussed, they talked about the neurological problems linked with each of the three brands, but they still allowed them to be introduced. From the very first weeks of the introduction, children started to have problems. One child in particular started with epilepsy within a week of the vaccine being given, back in October 88. The little girl subsequently died of a seizure, and the UK's Vaccine Damage Payment Unit gave a payment to her family way before Dr. Wakefield came on the scene. And that little girl was one of a number of children that died after the MMR was given. And some of those children, too, received payments. Also, we know that this was raised at a meeting back in 1997. I was present at that meeting. An MP instigated a meeting with the chief medical officer, the principal medical officer, Dr. David Salisbury, who's still in post, and the health minister, then Tessa Jowell. At that meeting, where Dr. Wakefield and Professor John Walker Smith were present, they discussed their forthcoming paper and asked for the single vaccines which were available on the NHS to be stockpiled in case, when the paper was published, more parents requested them. As I said, they were available on the NHS. At that meeting, I actually asked for the MMR vaccine to be suspended because we had a huge number of children, and our solicitors presented them with a list of 1,200 children believed to have suffered life-changing or life-ending problems following the administration of either the MMR or the measles rubella jab. I asked Tessa Jowell, as health minister, if she could please instigate a scientific investigation of the children, because what we hoped was, if a problem could be identified, then maybe the program could be improved, these children could be recognized, and maybe the system could be made safer. Tessa Jowell refused to do that. She said that she was willing to look at any new scientific information that we could produce. And I pointed out at that meeting that we were parents. Parents can't scientifically investigate our own children. We also stated at that meeting that the real reason why they did not know about the children we were giving them details of was because their reporting system, which is passive, it's down to a voluntary system, was wholly ineffective. Only about 10% of adverse reactions are put forward in the correct way. And the very few that are put forward to our watchdog, the Medicines Health Regulatory Authority, are very rarely followed up. So it seems that the Department of Health is presiding over a system that has very little safety data. What Tessa Jowell said in summing up at that meeting was that there would be an open forum when Dr. Wakefield's work was published, and at that forum, experts would be invited from home and abroad to address the forum, and all interested parties could be present. That did not happen. What took place was a closed meeting where we as representatives of parents were not allowed to attend. Neither was anyone from our legal team or even MPs. They were told no, they could not attend. So it's from that point that everything started to close ranks on the vaccine issue. As I say, Dr. Wakefield had asked, could single vaccines be stockpiled? We'd also reiterated that we felt it would be wise to make the singles available, hopefully while the MMR was investigated. But after that closed meeting, what happened was the NHS withdrew the single vaccines from the NHS system, and the licensed importer that was allowed at that time to bring in vaccines had its license revoked just for the importation of measles, mumps and rubella vaccines, nothing else. And that importer had to fight to get its license back so that private clinics could actually offer vaccines, but of course it would be more expensive. And it seemed from that point onwards that there seemed to be a vendetta against anyone who raised a flag to show that the vaccine could be in any way faulty. And it's an appalling situation, because all the way down the line, what we've been trying to do is get justice and recognition for the child that has been badly affected or has died, and make the system safer, because if there were some common traits in these children that could be identified, perhaps it could be screened for. But actually, that then could affect the system in that you would need to have a full range of choice, but a full range of choice, which would mean separate vaccines, would not be in the pharmaceuticals company's financial interest. Their interest lies in having a fresh market readily available for their new patented combinations. By introducing the single vaccines, which have been around since the early 60s in the UK, they're not producing a great deal of money for the drug companies.
Jackie,
their interest is in the combination.
Jackie, please hold your thoughts. We just have Isabella Thomas back on. I'm going to ask our stations in New York, we're going to run clear to the top of the hour, a little longer than normal, so that we can have Isabella Thomas's comments. We will be biting Clifford Miller back to do an entire hour on many other issues involving vaccines. Isabella, the forum is yours. Please go forward.
One of my sons, who was part of the Lancet study, I asked him his views in a lucid moment, because he has quite severe neurological problems. And I asked him to write it down. And I'll read just a bit of what he's written, because I think it's important that people know how these young people are feeling who are damaged and who can speak out on behalf of others. And he says, I feel that it's outrageous that the journalists and the wider media always seem to ignore children like myself, children who are in constant pain and suffering and experiencing uncertainty about not only themselves, but also their constant and often life-threatening conditions. And yet, there is hope. There is help there. There is help out there. But certain journalists and the GMC are attacking the only ones who seem to be able to help, the only ones who seem to care, the doctors. They seem intent on bringing justice to those that have done wrong, and yet they ignore the very people that need to help that need the help most. Whatever reason.
Hold on. I have a question for you, Isabella.
Yeah.
First off, everyone listening, you We're going to have a couple extra minutes on our local stations, but you can continue listening to this on the Progressive Radio Network. Please continue.
Right. Whatever reason is believed to be the cause of our problems, proper investigation and subsequent medical treatment should be provided. These good doctors that are unfairly on trial were trying to research into the cause of the problem and proper treatment, though now it seems like the research has come to a stop. Hundreds of new cases appear out of nowhere every year, and the problem, the suffering, is only increasing, much like the profits of certain vaccine manufacturers, and at the cost of what? The cost of lives, quality thereof, least mention the children who don't survive. In my opinion, I just find it unbelievable that we live in a century where others would not only put their own interest first, money being the key, if not the only factor, but where they would be willing to take it so far at the cost not only thousands of lives, but also thousands more suffering without any help. As a child who is in constant pain, I believe I can speak for all those who don't have a voice, those who cannot communicate their pain except through constant cries of pain and suffering. A final thought I have is that I hope somewhere, someone will have some kind of moral judgment on this case, and hopefully they will be in a position of sufficient power to help end this unnecessary suffering and pain. And that came from Michael. It took him hours and hours to write just that little bit. It was just an amazing thing to hear, because he does listen. I try to shield him, but he does listen. He is so upset with what Brian Deer is doing and what Brian Deer is saying. He's so upset with what the GMC are doing and what they're saying, because they're basically calling his parents liars. They're calling parents liars. They're even calling him a liar by saying he doesn't have autism, he doesn't have bowel disease, there's nothing wrong. He collapsed the other day. I had to call an ambulance. The school phoned today because they're concerned he's so pale in color. He cries. He wakes up in the middle of the night screaming in agony. He then says sometimes he doesn't even know if this is real, if the world is real. It's the most horrific thing to watch with these children. The BMJ have got no idea. They haven't looked at a lot of the medical files I've got. They haven't looked at the GP notes. They haven't seen where the GP has queried the MMR vaccine on behalf of Michael. So, you know, the whole thing is, it's outrageous. Children are dying. They're dying now. When I took Michael to buy a pair of shoes, there was a mother standing there with a child of about 7, very, very pale looking. And the mother just happened to say to me, oh, he's autistic. As if, not that she was apologizing, but because he was so distressed. And suddenly she said, and I blame the MMR. The MMR has caused this. And I thought, we have been campaigning, as Jackie has said, all of these years. And yet, still, to this day, there are children, there are babies being damaged by this vaccine, and the government know it's causing problems. My personal view, and that of a policeman that I spoke to whose child is damaged, is that this can be classed as murder, and they need to be taken to task over this.
Isabella Thomas, we are up to the last minute of our program. Make this statement to the American media, and specifically to CNN, Anderson Cooper, who engaged in what I consider one of the most irresponsible pieces of yellow journalism. Joseph McCarthy would have been proud of what Cooper did. The rest of us are embarrassed by it. Your final thought, we will see that Anderson Cooper gets your comments.
Put me on CNN with Brian Deer. Face to face with Brian Deer.
Okay, you have it, Anderson Cooper. I want the people in this audience to flood CNN corporate headquarters and simply, politely, but simply ask, you have a challenge. Bring on bring on Isabella Thomas, a mother who was one of the mothers of those children that Wakefield was accused of using, manipulating, lying, and let her debate their man, Mr. Deer, and let the public decide the truth.
I would love to do it in a room, face to face. Face to face, I'd like to look into his eyes, and I'd like him to look into my eyes, and let's talk. That's one thing he never did with me. He attacked me personally. He's attacked me in the media. He's attacked my children. Now let him do it face to face with a parent of a vaccine-damaged child.
I want the people. We have people from all walks of life in this audience, of all walks of life. I would like for you to call the president, the CEO, the CHO of CNN. I want you to call the top people and request politely, with dignity, that what many of us believe was a terrible, reprehensibly vile piece of journalism that should shame all journalists. Let Anderson Cooper bring on this woman and face Brian Deer, and let Deer then debate this woman, and let the American public see the truth of both sides. All we have seen is an unvetted Brian Deer, and we have brought to you all of the discrepancies, the contradictions, the falsehoods in his background, his affiliations, none of which were brought out by CNN or Anderson Cooper. Let the truth at least once, somewhere, come out in the American media. Thank you very much, Isabella Thomas. We look forward to another conversation. Thank you, Jackie Fletcher, and your organization over there. We look forward to an in-depth conversation in upcoming programs. This is just the beginning of our efforts, not the end. And we will bring this to the public's attention, and we will post our program. And thank you, Clifford Miller, solicitor for the Supreme Court of England, for the work you're doing, showing us that we have been lied to, manipulated in our own media. And as you said, how short is our memory, and showing what you said, you cannot retract what you have written as a point of science, and yet we have it. The proof is in there. We simply refuse to accept the details of that scholarship. Instead, we want to believe the proclamations of industry-supported front groups, physicians, scientists working on behalf of these front groups, and so easy to hire scientists and physicians for front groups, for pharmaceutical industries and vaccine manufacturers to state that these are all safe and effective when the science shows not that to be the case. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
The Gary Nall Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.